Welcome to Fate's Wide Wheel, a Quantum Leap podcast with Sam and Dennis. We are coming to you from our top secret headquarters at Project Quantum Leap, but you can find us online at fwwquantumleappod.com or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Fate's Wide Wheel. And please do us a favor by hitting the subscribe button on iTunes. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are today at Project Quantum Leap for another episode of Fate's Wide Wheel. And we thank you again for joining us. We're going to be talking about the Americanization of Machiko. This episode was directed by Gilbert Shilton, who also directed...
Two episodes in a row.
That's right.
Disco Inferno from last week.
He directed Disco Inferno. It was written by Charlie Coffey. This is his only episode, apparently, that he wrote of Quantum Leap. The air date was October the 11th, 1990. 1989, excuse me. Why did I... Man, that's the second time I've screwed up a date recently. Anyway, which means something in a time travel show, let's face it.
Yes.
So, air date, October the 11th, 1989. The leap date is August 4th, 1953. And Sam is leapt into Charlie McKenzie.
In Oak Creek, Ohio.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Would you like to read our TV guide?
Description of the week here.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Let's see what TV Guide has to say. Sam, Scott Bakula, leaps into a sailor returning home with a Japanese wife whose presence makes waves... in the small town. Somebody soul died a little bit when they wrote that.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sorry, TV Guide. Writers of TV Guide.
I mean, but seriously, think about it. At one point in time, like, that was a job that somebody had. Mm-hmm. Like, what do? Oh, I write copy for TV Guide. Oh, that sounds interesting. Like, imagine you live in, like, New York or California or wherever the hell that was produced in like 1985, and you're at a bar one night and you're sitting down having your drink, you know, and somebody saddles up next to you and they're just, you know, starting a conversation, and maybe you're interested in them, then maybe they're a little interested in you, and then all of a sudden you start exchanging jobs and you're like, I write copy for TV Guide, and it's like, oh, that could have been a door opener. You never know.
It could have been.
In 1985.
Sure.
In 2017.
Even now, I mean, TV Guide still exists. I just don't pick it up. I'm sure they still do similar, although I think I think I read some years ago, like, they were seriously cutting back on the actual, like, TV listings part of the print magazine, and the print magazine was mostly more about, like, stories and articles,
yes,
cheers
right.
and jeers.
Cheers and jeers.
Is that a column that still goes
wow.
on?
Wow, I don't know. I know Entertainment Weekly has something very similar to that. They've got, like, their hot and cold thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, because the horoscopes, and they used to have crossword puzzles. TV Guide, man.
Yeah.
Stroll down memory lane.
Another shout out. I think we go on a TV Guide tangent almost every episode.
Can you believe that it was founded in 1948? Although the first issue didn't come out until 1953. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. I guess it's because they were... It was a mail-only thing.
Okay.
But they didn't actually have their first issue proper until 53. Interesting. And apparently, here's something that's also kind of interesting. They're owned by CBS.
That's interesting.
It is interesting.
Anyway, so there's the TV Guide description. So Sam, as he so eloquently says in the opening moments... He's leapt into Popeye. He gets off a bus and he is in a sailor's outfit, and he is given his bag, and he is clearly
coming home. Rome.
Yeah, yeah, he is clearly arriving home.
Yeah, and I will say that because honestly, I don't feel like I have a lot to say about this episode, which is rare for me, because clearly I have a lot to say about a lot of
this
things.
This is going to end up being our longest episode ever.
But I will say that production value-wise, this scene is set very well.
Mm-hmm.
We get that we're in small-town America, that he's coming home. Like, you know, you just get that sense from what we're seeing right off the bat.
Mm. I do love his vibe. I love the voiceover, like, you know, normally anybody would be thrown off, but I've learned to use my detective skills. You know, he looks at his bag, he looks at his uniform, he hunches over an old man reading the newspaper, and he's able to get the date, which I'll note is 4 days before his actual...
That's right.
Before his actual birthday.
He's alive in there. Yeah. In the womb.
Yeah. You know? He is...
just waiting sure, to make his entrance.
Just hanging out, ready to go. But anyway, so he very quickly is picked up by his father, Henry McKenzie.
Played by Wayne Tippett,
mm-hmm.
who did a stint on the Rockford Files, among many other things.
Absolutely.
Of course he did.
Oh, James Gardner. Another connection to James Gardner is the title of this episode, The Americanization of Machiko, is
That's
a
right.
play on the title of The Americanization of Emily, starring James Gardner.
And Julie Andrews.
And Julie Andrews. And both characters, both James Gardner's character and Sam's character in this episode, was named Charlie.
I did not know that.
Or Charles.
Nice.
Yes. And the writer of this episode is named...
It is Charlie.
Is named
Charlie Coffee.
Yeah. So, three cheers to Charles all around. But anyway, so Henry picks up Sam and quickly whisks him away off home. And as soon as he gets whisked away, a Japanese woman in a kimono, she gets off the bus, gets her luggage, and she calls after Charlie, and it's very clear to everyone except for Sam, who is now gone, but Sam has accidentally, for all his detective skills...
Nice fucking detective work.
Yeah, great work.
Sorry.
He just ran off and left somebody behind.
His new wife.
Yes.
Who has never been in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
or the country before, really, other than the trip it took to get to Ohio.
So, yeah. Here,
I mean, what a piece of crap.
Oh, Sam. But anyway, so we go into the opening credits, and we come back. Sam and his dad, Henry, they're riding along. Sam has this one of those nice little monologues, how he feels like he's not back home in Indiana.
Yeah.
But he still feels... Very much at home.
Right. You get the sense like, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
This one's not going to be so hard.
Mm-hmm. Such as it is.
Right.
And then we cut away. We are introduced to Lenore and Naomi. Lenore is played by Kay Callan, who outside of this is probably... Well, I mean, not outside of this. Probably much more known as playing Martha Kent on... Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman.
And she, you know, she's someone who has, much like a lot of the guest stars on the show, a lot of work. Starting in, like, 1970, you know, it's certainly any character over the age of about 40 that we've seen in the show so far, that's just kind of their MO. You know, they've had a lot of work starting in the late 60s, early 70s, and they've done a lot of TV. And she's another one, you know, we were talking about on our last episode a bit about a couple of the actors and how they have continued working. She's continued working right up until today. She's in Veep, you know, she's a recurring character on Veep. She was in an episode of Grey's Anatomy this past season. She's, you know, so, I mean, she's still working all the time. It's funny because one of the ways that I recognized her, I didn't make the Martha Kent connection right away. It took IMDb to refresh my memory, but I knew I recognized her, and I was like, where do I recognize her from? And it dawned on me, she's in an episode of Justified, which is arguably one of the finest television shows ever forged, as far as I'm concerned.
I watched the first season of that show, and just because of timing and other stuff going on in my life, I never continued on after that, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think she's in the last season. She plays one of the characters that gets introduced in, like, the third season, I think. Or second season, maybe. But she plays her grand aunt, and she's, like, the last living relative that this character has, so she gets sent to, like, live with her. Anyway, yeah, it's a fantastic show, and she was in that. But it's just kind of cool to see that here's someone that's been working for the past damn near 50 years, you know, and almost exclusively in television, which is, you know, it's like, wow, that's, you put together one hell of a career there, ma'am.
Yeah.
So good for you.
That's awesome. And then we have Naomi, played by Elena Wool. Any information on her?
Not much, actually. I mean, she's definitely done some stuff, but did not seem to have quite the... resume as some of the other people. You know, Quantum Leap seems to be not the first thing that she did. She was on a show called Buck James, playing Dinah James, so I can only imagine that she was, like, the wife. Anyway.
Yeah. And so that's something I feel like we should clarify, because sometimes we make comments in episodes about actors who made it with a long career or actors who only popped up in a couple of things. I never want to give off the impression that we're coming off as derogatory.
God, no.
Because I, you know, speaking as, you know, two actors who probably at one point had aspirations of being up on stage giving like an Oscar acceptance speech.
Yeah.
Acting is so much, trying to make it in the film, just entertainment industry in general, it is so much like playing the lottery that becoming famous or not, or having a long career or not, oftentimes has very little to do with skill and oftentimes very much to do with luck. I just want to say that because I never want to come across like we're being derogatory towards actors who...
And even people that are somewhat successful, even for a time, to look at someone and say that that is your job or was your job, if you're not on screen, if you're not accepting an Oscar, most people are like, I don't get it. You know, there aren't a lot of people out there that, I mean, certainly living in a bigger city like Chicago, it's a hell of a lot easier to say that. And people are like, oh, okay, because it's such a huge town for stage. And,
well, sure.
And you know, so you're not necessarily going to recognize everybody. But yeah, when I lived in Indianapolis and I was legitimately working as a professional actor, it's how I made my living. If I were to say that to just somebody that didn't know me, you know, and wasn't in that scene, a lot of times it's like, have you been in any movies? Have you, you know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
It's like, no, I collect a paycheck every week
mm-hmm.
because I get up on stage and say words mm-hmm. and, you know, that's the definition.
The one time I actually made my full-time living as an actor, like the couple year stretch. Yeah,
yeah.
They were also down in Louisville, Kentucky and Newport, Kentucky, places where if I say I'm an actor and you give me some weird looks here in Chicago, people just go like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So are 10 other people that I know.
Right. Exactly. So yes, anytime that we talk about the length of somebody's IMDb page, we're not trying to poo poo any of their success at all, because I mean, let's face it, at the end of the day, you know, Elena here did an episode of Quantum Leap, amongst mm-hmm. other things, because she did actually do a lot of other things. She's like on NYPD Blue, Mad About You, Seinfeld. So, you know, she had a stretch of work there in the 90s in particular. Was also on Civil Wars. That show pops up again.
Yes,
it was on last week.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So anyway, we're introduced to these two characters, and we get an idea that Charlie, the person that Sam has leaped into, mm-hmm. he is returning home after 2 years. Naomi has waited for him, and Lenore throws out, well, from what I hear, you didn't exactly wait.
Yeah.
And Naomi takes that and just takes that in stride. It's like, well, I meant, like, wait to get married. She's not embarrassed by that.
No.
By that implication at all.
She's a very interesting character. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'll talk a little bit more about this later, but just not only the character specifically, but just her presence in the episode.
Yes. Yeah. And there is this nice moment where Lenore questions Naomi where she got these flowers and that they're full of bugs and you're supposed to shake them out. And that's a moment that gets called back later on. But that's when Sam and Henry pull up and they are immediately greeted. And Naomi is obviously like she is ready to pick right up where
they left off. Put the ring on my finger, let's go.
Where they left off 2 years ago. And there is this nice embarrassing moment where she is now a brunette, where apparently she was a blonde before, and Sam is Charlie. Obviously, he doesn't know that, so...
You haven't changed a bit.
Yeah, I'm now a brunette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
I was going to say that we get Al's entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because, you know, Al doesn't have all the information either.
Yes, he says, I jotted this down. At first he says that he is there to keep Charlie from marrying Naomi, because apparently that's what happened in the original history.
And they have a miserable life.
And they were just miserable. This is not off the top of my head. Excuse me. This happened in a previous episode where he's just there to keep Sam from marrying the person. Oh, Starcrossed, the second episode.
Right.
That's just the thing that time travelers do, just keep from getting don't marry the wrong person to be miserable the rest of your life.
I was going to say, when you think about it, like, Quantum Leap has taught us nothing, which it has taught us many things. But one of those things is the only things that really matter in life are getting married, dying, or a job. Because that's really all Sam does. He's either there to prevent someone from dying, prevent someone or get someone to get married, or get someone a job. I mean, that's really about it.
I can't argue with that.
So I'm just saying, those are the big three.
Are the big three. So
work, marriage, and death.
Yeah, there we go.
The life in a nutshell.
The Quantum Leap saga. There we go. So he's there to stop Charlie from marrying Naomi. And also we get an exchange in here where Al is very... He is not fond of the farm life.
Yeah. It's like, why couldn't she get into Vegas?
Yeah, why can't you leap into Vegas? Because leaping into Vegas would require them actually shooting in Vegas, probably.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
Which, we do get a not necessarily my Al line of the week, not that I have one every week, but we do get a moment where Al is quite Al when he looks at Naomi and says, well, she would fit in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty tame Al line, actually.
It is.
So anyway, this is the plan. He says that there's a 97% chance until the sheriff vehicle pulls up. Because the scene that we've skipped over on this is that, meanwhile, back in town, the sheriff has stumbled upon Machiko. Like, explains her story. Like, I married him. I've been left behind. We're introduced to Rusty.
Rusty, yeah.
And this one, because everybody's giving her kind of curious looks, but then Rusty gets the creepy
mean
eyes.
Just
the mean, creepy eyes, and he just follows her down the sidewalk.
And it's hard not to immediately, which this is interesting for reasons we'll get to at the end, it's hard not to immediately think of Color of Truth. In this instance, with the way that people are reacting to Machiko, not that it's the same thing, but that just the small town, the person not quite accepted in their surroundings.
Well, the thing is, it's like all, from what I recall, like watching this episode last night and this morning, like almost all of the characters aren't looking at her like in a angry, why are you here way?
Right.
It's kind of like this curious bemusement of, you're out of place. The only, throughout this episode, the only character that really shows Machiko animosity from a racist standpoint
is Rusty.
Yeah. Lenore has her issues, but they come from a different place, which we find out towards the end.
Right.
And Naomi has her issues, and they're obvious. But Rusty is the only, like, flat-out racist that we meet in this episode.
I would argue, though... No, I wouldn't argue anything you just said. I think you're absolutely right. But I would argue that some of the looks that she does get in that opening scene when she's walking through town by herself are similar enough to the looks of sort of shock and curiosity that Sam gets when he sits down at the counter the first time, just in the leap in scene.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's just that sort of sense of like, what are you doing here? Who are you? Why are you here? You know, it is interesting. And it's interesting to think that, like, you know, we're 8 years removed from the end of World War II. Almost 8 years exactly, actually, because it was like August 6th, 1945 or something like that, I think was when, you know, VJ Day was or whatever. But anyway, it is just interesting to kind of compare and contrast the episodes. Unfair, perhaps, in some ways, but interesting nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So anyway, so the sheriff has picked up Machiko, brought Machiko out to the farm, and this is my level where the vehicle is pulling up, Al looks over and he goes, but there is always that 3% of something, that margin of error. And sure enough, Machiko pulls up, and in short, she reveals that she is Charlie's wife. And I love this moment where Al says, don't you want to say something? And it's just like, surprise! So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I can't help but feel already in this episode, Sam doesn't feel... It feels like this episode is happening to Sam, as opposed to previous episodes where it feels like Sam is happening to his surroundings. Mm. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
And whereas, it's a little weird.
Yeah, whereas, and yeah, I was thinking about this earlier, where to go back and compare it with Color of Truth, he, from the get-go, he gets very, very worked up, and he gets very angry over way people are treating Jesse, and by extension, black people in general.
And Jesse's niece. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this episode, where he gets more vocal towards the end, and when there are incidents that happens with Lenore that we'll come up on, instead of immediately jumping on Lenore, it's all about making Machiko feel better in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed, yes. So, like, he's reacting to it, he's trying to protect her feelings, and he is not, you know, like you were saying, like, he's not happening to the episode. Like, he is not getting up in Lenore's face and being like, why are you being this way? This is what needs to happen.
Right, he doesn't feel like the crusader here. He doesn't feel like the, you know, like Don Quixote. Mm-hmm. You know, he feels a little bit more like, yeah, just someone who's like, these are things that are happening to him, are happening while he's around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that carries out through almost the entire episode, mm-hmm. kind of like what you were just saying.
Yeah. And if you want to read into it, you could say that since he is very much like back in his home mm-hmm. environment, where he mm-hmm. remembers growing up in Indiana, maybe he is a little bit more understanding and deferential.
Yeah. Well, and he is surrounded by an interesting crew, you know, of characters. But everyone feels very stereotypical. You know, you've got the angry mom because of the past family tragedy. You've got the goofy, accepting father who's just bumbling his way through. You know, you've got the harlot who is trying to, you know, woo him over. You've got the perfect, you know, pretty much domesticated woman who was his wife. You've got, you know, the bigot who wants to cause trouble. Like, everyone just feels very stereotypical.
Mm-hmm. They don't step very much outside of those,
no.
those roles that you just listed off.
Yeah.
So anyway, so in this first scene, Al now has more information. He apologizes.
Right.
Ziggy did dig deep enough that in the original history, Machiko returned to Japan in shame because she was never accepted by the family, and she never married again.
Right.
After that.
And it ended up leading to the failed marriage between Charlie and Naomi.
Mm-hmm. So, that is what Sam is there to do. So, during the scene, Machiko is trying to present Lenore gifts and Henry him. With these gifts because this is very much the custom. And this is something we were talking about off mic. I started to look into and dig into it. Like, I was trying to figure out, like, the customs that they talk
right.
about. How many of these customs that they presented were accurate and how many weren't. And then it's just going down the rabbit hole of the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't able to get a lock on what was accurate and what was not. But realistically, for an hour of television, fairly, I would say that like, they did a fairly, for the casual viewer, probably like representing what were customs.
Sure, sure. Well, we should mention real quick that Machiko is played by Leela Lee Olsen, although she's credited in this episode as Leela He Olsen. She, you know, oddly enough, it looks like the last thing that she appeared in was an episode of Lois and Clark, which is kind of funny.
Interesting.
All things considered. But yeah, she did a few films and television programs here and there, and had actually, looks like, starred in a television show called What a Country prior to Quantum Leap. But I don't know much else about her, unfortunately, because it's pretty thin, you know, her bio and stuff and info on IMDb and other things that mm-hmm. I can find. So
I wonder if she is an actor who she had another career overseas and she made her way over to the United States, or
Could be.
Or otherwise.
I don't know, though, because it's... I get... The Olsen... The funny thing is that some of her early credits, she's just credited as Leela He, which makes me wonder if Olsen was... She married someone.
Okay.
And that was their last name, so maybe she did. I don't know. I don't know. I like I said, unfortunately, there's just really not a lot out there about her, so I don't know much about her. But, I mean, she's very good in the role, you know. Mm-hmm. She really is. I think that, you know, honestly, out of all of the supporting characters, she's the one that gets the most... depth and range.
I mean, she is. I mean, she's someone like throughout the episode, the way she is treated throughout the episode, but she also gets some of the best lines, you know, in the episode of just like recognizing her situation, but also like being able to make a joke or an observation about it.
Right. Well, and I would almost say that she. The story that she's given is a bit paint by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I know sometimes, cause like we've spoken before, even within the context of Quantum Leap, about how some things that, you know, when they're first done, it's like, oh, wow, that's, you know, but 50 years later, we look back on it and we're like, wow, that feels cliched or hackneyed or whatever. I'm not saying that in that way for this episode. I'm saying that as in, like, even by 1989 standards, her story is still kind of paint by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, the foreign wife of the guy home from war, and she's not accepted, but, you know, she shows grace and compassion and, you know, et cetera, and has wisdom or blah, blah, blah. Like, even in spite of it being that way, she still, the actor, I think, does a great job with, you know, the role.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably helps that, you know, most of her stuff is with Scott Bakula, and, you know.
And that's what I feel... The best scenes in this episode are just, like, her and Scott Bakula.
Yeah.
With one another.
Which, how interesting is it, in a way, if you think about it, for Scott Bakula as Sam, that he... Because he is the rock, if you will, the standard of the show, in so much as... He's the one that interacts with everyone else. I mean, obviously, you got Dean Stockwell, but Scott Bakula is really the one that interacts with anyone else who comes in. And it's almost the opposite for the TV show, you know, whereas Sam, the character, is leaping into a situation not knowing what the hell is going on and having to acclimate himself to this.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that is, in reality, Scott Bakula, the actor, is the one who knows the show, knows the production, knows what goes into an episode, knows what... And all the other guest actors that are coming in have to kind of acclimate themselves to the production of the episode.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's an interesting observation.
Yeah.
So we have this first scene, speaking of... between Sam and Machiko, like, she has excused herself because I can't count all the ways that Lenore's been horrible.
Oh,
and just
God.
In this first scene,
she calls the kimono a bathrobe. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just
and all these
very poorly.
Not only just what she says to her face, but there's a moment where Henry takes Machiko over and he makes a comment like, I'm going to show you a bunch of bare bottom photos of Charlie when he was younger, and they're off looking at one thing, and Lenore pulls Sam off to the side, like, how could you do this to me?
Yeah.
Such a narcissistic line.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to come back to that later on.
Yes.
But I
have a feeling it, yeah, yes.
But Sam but Sam is all about, this is not something that I did to you. I fell in love with this woman, and I married her, and you need to accept that.
Yep.
Basically. But then... after this, Machiko is out on the steps. She's kind of recovering from this, you know, from this scene. And Sam tells her how it is in America. And he gives he gives a somewhat naive...
well, especially by 1954 standards.
Yes, yeah. Especially by 1954 standards, and I would say maybe by present standards.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, we could certainly sit here all day and say, like, oh, things are better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, also,
I mean,
for posterity, I mean, if you're listening to this, like, way later, like, we are recording this episode, like, while the Me Too movement, to put a shorthand on it, is also happening in our culture right now.
Right.
So,
which, to be fair, let us also be clear that while the vast majority of the Me Too movement are women, that that does not mean that there aren't men
who
are saying Me Too as well and have every right to and should be.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it does indeed go both ways. It's just that it has been for such a long time acceptable for it to go a certain way that, or not acceptable, that's the wrong way to put it. It's just silently condoned, maybe.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. But anyway, that provides the context of why, especially watching the scene with Sam explaining like how men and women are equal in America, so.
They have equal rights.
They have equal rights, yeah. It's a little bit naive and
and it's funny because I think that, again, in the context of 1954, he talks about how a wife isn't a servant and a wife doesn't have to do, you know, this or this. But the thing is that you show me one television program, for example, from 1954 that doesn't have the wife doing the cooking, the cleaning, the laundry, that, you know what I mean? Like, in all respects, even by 1954 standards, there was an accepted or a silently condoned, if you will, standard of what a wife was supposed to be, and that's what she was supposed to be. She has the baby, she cooks, she cleans, she does, you know what I mean? And the man goes off to work, and then he comes home, and he sits in his easy chair, smokes his pipe, and watches TV or reads the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's how everybody was. I'm not saying that's even how we wanted to hold the ideal up to. But there, by no means in 1954... were men and women looked upon by general society in the United States of America as being equal.
Yes.
So it is kind of interesting that that's how he... And I even remarked to Jess when we were watching the episode, I was like, 1954? I mean, like, at least not for another 10 years. And even then, like,
yeah,
it's a stretch, that's, you know?
Yeah. But we have this great line where, you know, he explained the difference, like, you know, how, you know, the difference between men and women in America and the difference between men and women in Japan.
Right.
And I can't remember the exact setup, but Machiko has a great line. I think all men in Japan must be retired.
Yeah.
So.
Which is interesting to me because I think that that's... I do think that that's a slight misconception. You know, I think that there is definitely a certain male dominance at a certain level in Japanese culture and society and at that time, you know, mm-hmm. in the 40s and 50s, but as someone who, you know, appreciates film and even right now I'm looking over and I'm, you know, I'm seeing films like Tokyo Story on my DVD rack or whatever, that Ozu, who's a Japanese filmmaker, started in the 20s, worked all the way through into, like, the early 60s. Explored a lot of those dynamics of family and you know, sexuality through his films. And even though there is definitely a paradigm of power that exists, I don't know that I would say that women in Japan were treated as less than to the degree that, you know, Machiko is saying here to Sam. Especially because in a lot of ways, you know, women of a certain age in particular were often revered and considered kind of the head of the household. Mm-hmm. Now, younger women, yes, younger women were seen as, you know, you need to be married by a certain age and you need to, you know, do these things. That's the way society goes. I don't think it was much different here in the United States. But I do think that it seems a little cliched to just be like, oh, well, in our society, women were treated this way, you know? So it's like, eh, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of love for the writer, to be honest.
Okay, gotcha. Speaking of how women are treated, we should jump back. We jumped over big detail in the first scene, but we learned that there's another character, Eileen, who was Noreen Henry's daughter and Charlie's...
Sister,
and... We don't get the details just yet, but she died, they say, just over a year ago.
Which
and Charlie's been gone for 2 years, so it's interesting that while I'm sure that, you know, they contacted Charlie by whatever means, and then they broke the news to him, and Charlie has had time to process it, it is interesting that this is the first time that Charlie is home since his sister has died.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think come back to that a little bit later But one thing I'll also say that Henry, the father, has offered up Eileen's room for Machiko because they don't want them Charlie and
to be in the same Machiko room share until they, bed until they get married proper.
Yeah. Which that's the other thing, married proper. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, come on. They were married. Mm-hmm. They are married. Like, just because they're not married in front of, you know, your church.
Yeah.
Like,
I also kind of took it as a bit of a delay tactic on Lenore's part to see if there's a way to nullify this before they ever get to sharing a bedroom together.
But because of the way that it's treated in the episode, because Sam doesn't have a strong reaction to it, because there's no counterpoint to it, I just feel like it's like the... It plays into, like, all those, like, tropes of, like, the, you know, the civilized savage or what... You know what I mean? Like, the idea that, like, oh, in a Western, like, the guy marries the Indian wife and, you know, but she's different because she's a savage and because she... You know, I just don't like it. I don't like that there's not a counterpoint to it. I don't like that Sam doesn't immediately say, like, we are married, you know, and doesn't stand up for it. Again, it continues that theme of it feels like the episode is happening to Sam instead of Sam happening to the episode, and I don't like it.
I mean, yeah, if you... I don't think we have time to, like, really, like, dig deep and unpack this, but to bring it to a comparison to The Color of Truth, is the fact in that episode, like, injustices were happening to him as a man. And in this episode, the injustice is happening to somebody else, and as a woman, and so it's a weird, like he doesn't feel as strongly... To interject.
Like, but there are other episodes, though, mm-hmm. and this is why I blame the writer.
Mm-hmm.
There are other episodes where Sam does stand up for the other people around him, where Sam does stand up specifically for women,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, even going back to, like, Kamikaze Kid.
Yes.
You know, so I can't help but think that, like, that's, again, that's why I blame the writer. I'm just like, dude, you had a golden opportunity to really show, like, Sam being cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And instead... Instead, that's why it just feels like don't like the way that everyone else gets to look at Machiko, and it's like okay,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, Sam's just like, go along to get along; it'll be fine.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's okay that they look at her as being this
mm-hmm.
when they're speaking Japanese, because Sam speaks Japanese, which is mm-hmm. a cool little tidbit.
Yeah, the tidbit.
You know,
yeah, where
that he speaks the language, the seven languages.
He speaks seven languages and four dead ones, mm-hmm. as Al points out. Yeah,
you know, and they're speaking Japanese, and she's like, "Don't talk that gibberish in my household."
Mm-hmm.
And Sam doesn't say it's not gibberish. You know, that's her language. That's, you know, I respect her enough to communicate to her in her language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm sorry, as we start talking about this, I got issues.
Yeah, I know.
If you thought the right hand of God had a sore spot for me...
Woo. Yeah, you got some issues. you know, what's interesting... I don't even know. I'm going to throw this out there, but...
Do it.
I don't even buy it now as I start to throw it out there, is it just occurs to me that, to give a minor spoiler away, later on in an episode, we do meet Sam, his parents.
Yeah.
And... it just occurred to me that the actor who plays, or Kay Callan, who plays Lenore, and the actor who plays Sam's mom, those two actors live in a similar headspace in my brain. They do look somewhat similar to each other. So I could say that maybe because there is, like, that physical resemblance between Lenore and Sam's mother, like, he's a bit deferential. But even in that episode, which we'll come up on, Sam is respectful of his mother, but he is not so deferential that he won't stand up for what he believes in.
I'm thinking of a scene specifically right now about that episode that you're talking about that I could bring up that's like, no, he stands up to her, but we will digress and not spoil that episode.
So yeah, so again, put it on Charlie Coffee for Sam being so milk toast? I don't know if that's the right word.
That's perfect.
Go along to get along? Yeah. So, from there we go... they're going to go into town because... another great line in that scene where they're sitting out on the steps and Sam is comforting Machiko. Machiko makes a connection that if men and women are equal, then husband's money is wife's money.
Yeah.
And that they should go shopping... And,
buy me clothes.
Yeah. And there's a great moment where Sam makes a line. I can't remember how exactly he says it, but Machiko mishears that as like, oh, you're going to teach me to drive.
Yeah.
And that segues us into the scene of...
Well, and the other thing is the Sammy's in heaven, like... And this is nitpicking, and I recognize that. But she says the thing about wanting some new clothes so she can look more American, and needing money from Sam in order to do that, because, you know, husband's money is wife's money. And Sam responds with, yeah, I need some new shirts anyway. As though to say, if I didn't need new shirts,
yeah, you know,
you wouldn't get your dress.
That line jumped out.
Ugh!
That line jumped out at me as well. Yeah, that was a weird line.
Anyway. Smoke curls
out of
my ears.
Yes. So we get a... Right Hand to God was a masterpiece compared to this one.
Damn right.
Because
nuns deserve that church.
Yeah. So, so we get this nice little scene by the road where Machiko wants to stop and picks up flowers.
Right, she's teaching her to drive.
Yeah, she slams on the brakes, slams his head into the windshield, but she picks out the flowers and she shakes them out, mm-hmm. and Sam's like, oh, is that some ancient Japanese custom? She's like, no, I'm shaking the bugs out.
Right.
Which is a callback to...
Which is...
To Lador, the first scene.
As much as I've decried some things, that is a nice little moment, you know.
Mm.
And there's also... She has that wonderful bit of dialogue. And again, it's like, I want to praise it, but at the same time, it does come off kind of cheesy. But she has that bit of dialogue about how together all daisies look the same, but when you get up close... You know, each one is different in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
Each one is beautiful. And then Sam has the voiceover about hoping that as much as he wants to Americanize her for Lenore's sake, he hopes that Lenore starts to accept her for her differences. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, okay, thank you for telling me the theme of the episode and using this beautiful little metaphor to do so. I like it. It works. The rest of it's crap. Whatever.
sure. No, really, we jumped over an entire scene. The fact that one night has already passed.
Yes, right.
Because the thing that sends Machiko out on the steps later on is the fact that...
Lenore...
Like she tried to cook breakfast, she tried to cook rice, and Lenore threw the rice out.
Yeah.
Ah, Lenore!
I know, tosses the rice out. Like, Jess is like, what a bitch! You know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, God. And then Henry comes in, all excited to try her new tea that she brought from Japan, and, like, you know, and Lenore's like, what, our tea's not good enough for you here? You know?
Yes.
And that's the thing, it's like what you said earlier about Lenore having her reasons for treating Machiko the way that she does. I won't argue that. I think you're right. Like, clearly, like, she does have that reason. But she's still being pretty freaking racist about it all. It'd be different if she was treating her poorly in some way because it was a... It'd be... If she was pointing something out about her as a woman or as a daughter-in-law, the way she treats Charlie, but because everything that she harps on is because she's Japanese... That's what makes me just want to be like, no, screw you.
Yeah, but I will say, a broader thing in general is that when we don't like someone, we very often jump to, if it's not race or whatever it is, but very often it is race, like, we jump to the one thing that makes them different, and that's the thing that we attack.
Yeah, but then doesn't that just make you a bigot?
Yes, but I'm just saying it's while I will agree that Lenore's character is pretty one dimensional.
Yeah,
it doesn't strike me as odd that even though she has different reasons to not warm up to Machiko, that race and the fact that she is Japanese is a...
I'm going to put on my Dr. Gregory House hat for a moment and just throw this out there. There are so many better reasons to not like people. Like,
oh,
there
absolutely.
Are just so many reasons to, like, not like people. And Lenore could have her reasons as twisted as they are. But for her to continually just basically, because she's Japanese, because she's foreign, because
mm-hmm.
she's bringing something foreign into her house, it's just like... It could. I just feel like it could have been handled better. I really do. I blame the writer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Charlie Coffey. Wherever you are, sir, I'm sorry. But come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. But anyway, so we have this nice little scene that kind of wraps up the message of the episode. Next to the roadside, they go into town. They go shopping. We have this nice little moment where... Sam explains to her that she does not have to walk 10 feet behind him, but they walk side by side. They go into a store. They run into Rusty. Rusty shoulder bumps Sam. they have an exchange of words. Or I'd say Rusty has some words, and Sam just chooses to ignore and walk away. Then when they come back out from shopping, they have this cute little moment about, you know,
learning to walk in heels,
and then they see that it's Rusty. It's obviously Rusty has written "Jap Go Home," painted "Jap Go Home" on the side of their pickup truck.
Yeah, and he's got this, you know, when we see a close up of his face, he's got this sick little, you know, smile almost on his face, like he's just so proud that he painted that truck. But another thing that I wanted to point out real quick about Dear Charlie Coffee is this is the guy that wrote Earth Girls Are Easy. Alright, this is the guy.
Getting personal.
This is the guy that apparently worked on Medusa Dare to Be Truthful, which was that parody of Madonna's Truth or Dare movie.
Alright.
Like, I don't feel so bad anymore for bashing this guy because.
Alright.
I don't think he could have written his way out of a paper bag.
Tear him apart. Go get him.
I mean,
did he write any other episodes of Quantum Leap? No.
His only episode.
All right.
His only episode. And apparently he hasn't written anything in like 23 years. So. All right.
There we go. So where do we go from there? So they walk up. They see this thing written on the side of the truck.
Right.
Machiko's heartbroken. Sam is, Rusty is standing by the building.
Being a douche nozzle. And then we cut to Henry and Lenore in the car with the Reverend and his wife on their way home from church.
Mm-hmm.
We get another Sam shirtless scene, baling hay in the barn.
Oh, so yes, in the barn. So yeah, now we...
Machiko's doing some chores. Naomi comes on pretty strong to Sam.
I wouldn't say come on pretty strong. Like,
mounts
yes.
him.
mounts him. She's like, let's do this. I'm going to,
And then they basically end up while they're tussling in the hay. Machiko is doing her chores, and she disrobes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that is true, whether or not Sam's explanation later is exactly true, one thing that is true is that, there is a certain comfortability with the body and being topless.
Mm-hmm.
Was customary at a time in Japan that it would not have been a big deal for a woman to do something like this. Sam and Naomi fall from their tower of hay.
Mm-hmm.
Machiko comes in and sees them.
Well, at this point, because the car pulls up with the Reverend and the Reverend's wife,
it's all kind of happening.
It was kind of like this farcical, comedy of errors. Everybody comes in, and there's actually this moment. Before we get to that moment, Al is watching this. And it just now occurs to me, usually Al would be encouraging.
Yeah, go for
this.
It.
Go for it. Whatever. She's hot.
Not this
but,
time.
He even has a line: "Tell her to put an egg in her shoe and beat it."
Yeah.
I have never heard that.
No,
I have never heard that outside anywhere else.
I was like, "What? What
and
is
I'm,
that?"
I'm gonna chalk that up to Charlie Coffee. This has become the Charlie Coffee hate hour.
Oh, another thing that I wanted to go back to real quick is that Jess made this comment that I feel like I need to add in about when they're in town and they're going back to the truck and or even before the truck when Rusty bumps into Sam. She's like, "What is with all the overalls?" And she raises a good point. All the men are wearing overalls.
They're all.
Yeah.
Yeah. At one point, Henry is wearing overalls and a shirt and tie.
Yeah. Yeah.
In
what?
The episode. It just seemed like a very much a shorthand, easy for the costume department.
Yeah.
Let's just get some overalls. That'll be easy.
Apparently, the put an egg in your shoe and beat it, that is where the... beat it, get out of here, comes from. The idea is if you put an egg in your shoe and beat it, you're beating an egg, you have to be walking away. So literally, when you tell somebody to beat it, that's where it came from. Put an egg in your shoe and beat it. Make a tree and leave. I did that just for you.
There's our Back to the Future.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is it
reference?
Make like a tree and get out of here?
Yeah, make like a tree.
So that, I don't know if your mind is blown or not, but that is where Beat It comes from.
That is the shortening, like the Beat It. I'm just going to start using that now.
Beat It comes from...
From put an egg in your shoe and beat it.
Yep.
I'm just going to start saying that to people.
Do it.
And just see what happens.
Yeah, I might as well.
But anyway, so we have the scene where Naomi tries to... I won't even say seduce. Rape.
Pretty much.
Tries to rape Sam / Charlie. And everybody comes together and... Machiko walks in on Naomi laying on top of Sam because they've fallen off one level down onto a lower level, and then we have almost like this Rocky Horror Picture Show moment where all the characters are shouting out everyone's names.
Yeah.
Charlie, Machiko, Naomi, Reverend Felcher, and then the
Earl.
And then the Reverend's wife faints.
Yeah.
And we get an oh boy.
Yeah. And then Al tells Sam about how when he was stationed in Japan, in remote parts of Japan, that women in hot weather would do their chores topless or whatever. And Sam relates that, and he's like, she didn't mean to offend anyone. And then the Reverend has the curious line, although the actor doesn't do it in a creepy way, so kudos to him. But he does have the line of, oh, we're not offended.
Yeah.
As though
yeah,
to be like...
Very, yeah. And that's... And to Charlie Coffey's credit... He could have written the scene where they were deeply offended.
Sure.
And like they were, or he could have written the scene where the Reverend was creepy.
Right.
And he did get off on it, but the Reverend instead is just very genuine, and he just like, oh, we're not offended, it happens, yeah, that was a little bit embarrassing, and I'm sure I'm going to catch hell from my wife on the drive home, but... Or not
the but come to the like, picnic.
Yeah, yeah, come to the picnic.
We want
yeah,
to see you at the picnic.
That's kind of knocking the Reverend's wife, because I even like the Reverend's wife in that scene. She was very...
She doesn't seem... Yeah.
Yeah, she...
No,
yeah.
Yeah, there's no... And it's funny
see
because...
That, it's so... It would have been so stereotypical for her to be that way. I went back and I remembered the scene that way.
Yep, exactly. I yep, and that's... Yes, I'm right there with you. The same thing with the Reverend's line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the not offended thing. Like, in my head, I see it going that way of just being like, oh, I'm not offended.
Yeah.
I'm not offended by topless women crossing my eyes. You know?
Yeah.
But that's not at all what it is. Instead, mm-hmm. it's just like, no, it's okay, we're not offended. You
yeah.
know, in fact, we want you all to come to the picnic. And even Betty is in the car, you know, kind of like, yeah, you
yeah.
know, come to the picnic. You know? So you're right, it is handled really well. Unfortunately, Lenore is not so forgiving.
She's not, yeah. How could you? What were you doing? I'm not going to the picnic.
Yep. And she's afraid of being gawked at, much like Eileen, and you know, doesn't want to be ostracized in that same way.
Mm-hmm.
Which
we still don't know what exactly happened with Eileen.
But we're about to find out.
Yeah, we are coming up. And so we have this yet another scene where Naomi tries to get Charlie to come around. She shows him like
the
thing on a bench,
and it's so interesting to me because she went with the I'm gonna climb onto this bale of hay and force you to have sex with me to come over here, sit next to me, look at this thing that we did before you went away, you know, to the Navy, and don't you remember how in love we were, and you know, I was the only person that stood up for your sister that whole time, and she got pregnant, and I still stood up for her, and then, you know, I did everything I could to stand by her until she drove that car right off a cliff. And it's just like, how did you go from, like, in my opinion, pulling out, like, the big guns, which is to just be like, take me, Charlie,
yeah,
to sitting you down, holding his hand, and being like, I love you, Charlie. Don't you remember? We're in love. And I stood by your sister. It just, it feels a little, you went from let's have sex to I stood by your sister before she killed herself.
In defense of Naomi, maybe she figured, like, that's the shorthand that's always worked with women before.
Sure, I get it.
Let's just jump to the sex, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. And we don't know what kind of guy Charlie was.
That's very true.
So
very true. Well, regardless, it still doesn't work.
Yeah.
And this is another damn you, Charlie Coffey moment, because Sam is like, has this moment where it's like almost there because he's like, my sister committed suicide? And Naomi's like, oh, well, you know, sheriff said it was an accident. of course it wasn't an accident. Yes, she committed suicide because she was pregnant and, you know, they weren't going to accept that in small town America in 1953. Mm-hmm. And then he immediately is just like, I appreciate everything that you did, but I am married now and you have to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what am I watching at this point? I'm going a little too far. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know.
Well, to jump back, like before that, like we even have the scene where Naomi tries to say, like, tell me you love her. And we have this like weird, awkward thing. And they do this in some episodes and I'm never crazy about it, where they make Sam so literal that he's afraid to say, I love this person when he doesn't love the person. Like he can't just speak up and just say, yes, I love this person. Like he has to go out of his way to say, Charlie McKenzie loves Machiko.
Yeah.
Oh, Sam, just get over yourself. Don't take it so damn literally and just be the person. Anyway, but after that and this scene right here, the fact that Sam just says, leave me alone, that doesn't bug me so much because even though like he just had a big information drop on him, it's still pretty apparent that Naomi is using that for an impure purpose. Like she's using it as a tool of manipulation to go, I did this, now you have to love me.
Right. Don't you get that I stood by your sister when no one else did, and that means that you love me? Yeah. No, yeah. Anyway, so now it's over.
And Naomi says, well, I guess all there is to be is for me to be your friend, and she storms off, and we get to the picnic where somehow Sam has made it there by himself. Naomi and Machiko show up together, and this is the point we talk about, like, the writing of this episode. This is the point when I was watching it, I'm like, how did Sam leave Machiko alone with Naomi? And they've already shown that Machiko,
well,
is a pretty smart person with a good head on her shoulders. She already has to know that Naomi does not have her best interest at heart.
Yes. And she clearly knows English well enough to know what fat means. Mm-hmm. And she clearly, Sam, you know, but again, Dennis, remember that Charlie Coffey has just written the words that Naomi has said, I'm going to be your friend now. So that's really all we need to know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No, but you're right. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
As Nancy in Stranger Things Season 2 says, it's bullshit. It's all bullshit.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
Yes, okay. But yeah, it does... it's at this point, I'm just like, oh, they're just kind of all over the place with this episode. So we have this scene where Naomi gets Machiko to embarrass herself by calling the mayor and the mayor's wife fat.
Yep.
And Machiko figures out very quickly that she's screwed up. I do love, after she storms off, the camera lingers on the group of people at that table for just a little bit, and the guy playing the mayor, he doesn't have much to do, but he just stares off to into space with this look that, for what little bit he has, it's just, if you just hone in on him, because like it's a pulled out, like it's a master shot, but if you just hone in on him and the look on his face, he just does like a very funny thing of just like, yeah, I'm fat. She's right. I'm fat.
No pie at this picnic.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So we have another scene of Sam comforting Machiko and wiping off the makeup that Naomi has painted on her. And this is the moment.
Because I'm sure that Charlie wrote a line where Sam looked at her and was like, you look like a painted whore.
Yeah.
But they decided to cut that line. That would have been a little too funny.
that would have been too deep.
So, yeah.
But the line that does bug me about that Sam written in this episode is like, after he wipes off the makeup off and he makes her feel better, he's like, you know, he brushes the hair out of her face and brushes her, like, there's my pretty girl. That's the line that kind of bugged me.
Yeah, right. And then he follows that up with saying, like, now come watch me play baseball. That'll make you feel better.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? No, take her home, you dumbass.
Yeah. Like, well, that moment is saved by come watch me play baseball, and they cut immediately to Machiko shouting, kill the umpire. and someone looking at her. I think it's Henry. Henry. Yeah, it's Henry. Goes, oh, you do get this game.
Yeah,
yeah.
You do have baseball. Yeah.
So yeah, that is a moment that is saved by the actor who plays Machiko.
Yeah, and then and Sam has been in the in the outfield here, and he's playing second base actually, and he makes a really good play. Mm-hmm. And as he does this though, Rusty is like clearly gunning for him.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's like, what's that guy's problem? And that's when we kind of learned that like Rusty really, he's a great baseball player, blah, blah, blah. He turns out he's the pitcher. Sam gets up to bat. Rusty tries to bean him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Al's flipping out.
Yeah,
you know,
pop him in the
give him a fat lip. And then, eventually, like, you know, Al coaches him. He's like, you know, okay, these two have been inside. This is going to be the outside. And Sam crushes one, which is funny considering Genesis. Because Jess says to me before he hits the home run, Jess is like, well, we know he can't play baseball. Because of Genesis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one, he was up against a pro, and two, he was batting left-handed in that episode.
That is true.
In this episode, he's batting right-handed. But anyway, Al coaches him, like, this next one's going to be outside. He knocks it out of the proverbial park. Home run, but then Rusty decides to tackle him.
Yep.
And I love that they didn't do the stereotypical, just, like, Rusty tackles him. I love that they made it like Sam is smart enough to just, like, nope, I see this coming.
Yeah.
And let him make a fool of himself. And when Sam asks him why he's doing it, we get the oh so subtle line.
Rusty, I hate Japs.
And so we cut from the scene of like people holding them back respectively, and now we get to the storm sequence.
Yes, yeah. So they're headed home, and there's a storm a coming, and Machiko goes down to the storm cellar. And Sam and Henry are going to take care of the animals. Lenore gets a phone call in the midst of this storm, and someone tells her what happened at the picnic with the mayor and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Lenore storms downstairs, no pun intended, and berates Machiko for her comments and, you know, basically just reams her out. Mm-hmm.
There's even a moment before, like, we did that point, like, Machiko bows to her, and Lenore's like, why you do that? To show respect. Well, what do you know about respect? You said this. And Machiko tries to apologize and bow again, and that's when Lenore, you know, says a horrible thing. Just, like, get out. Like, don't talk to me, don't touch me, don't even look at me.
I never want to see you again.
I never want to see, yeah. And that's when Machiko
runs out,
storms out,
and gets picked up by Rusty. What is this episode?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Sam realizes what's happened. Al tells him that, mm-hmm. you know.
And another, this horrible, like, they don't even try to make Lenore redeemable in any way.
No.
Like, if, like, Lenore had said this horrible thing, and then Machiko storms out, and then Lenore had this moment of, oh my god, what did I do? Like, I don't like this person, but I can't send this person, like, out into a storm. Had she, like, run out and, like, tried shouting after Machiko, that would have been one thing. But no, she just lets her go, and when people, when Sam and Henry ask, she's like, oh, who knows what people do? Blah, blah, blah. She's probably out running topless out in the storm.
Yeah. So Al helps Sam figure out where she is. She's mm-hmm. obviously with Rusty. Rusty has his World War II monologue about, you know, the best years of his lives were taken away because he was supposed to be a ball player, and he mm-hmm. was scouted by the Yankees and the Orioles, who didn't even exist at the time, but I digress. Mm-hmm. You know, he's scouted by all these teams, and he's gonna, you know, but that was ripped away from him.
Yeah.
And then he literally talks about the best years of our lives, the film,
mm-hmm.
And the character losing an arm, and he pulls out a knife, and he implies he's going to literally cut Magico's arm off.
Yeah, and he gets it wrong. Like, the character, and, like, I knew nothing about this movie until I looked it up. Like, there is a character in the movie, The Best Years of Our Lives, which are about three World War II vets who are coming home, and they're readjusting to small town life.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this off mic, and, you know, you have a copy of the movie sitting around here, you just haven't watched it yet. But it treats returning veterans coming home from World War II in a more realistic way than a lot of movies at the time did. And there is one character in the movie who in real life, the actor did not have hands. He had mm-hmm. hooks for hands, and that's the character that Rusty is
alluding to, yeah.
Referencing
And one of the things, too, that is interesting to think about the movie is that the movie was released in 1946.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, this is like right after the war is over, and the fact that Hollywood is willing to tackle this subject matter and do it in the way that they did, and with the actors that were involved, because it was a pretty, you know, I mean, Dana Andrews, Myrna Loy, Frederick March, Virginia Mayo. I mean, it's a pretty big cast. Ended up winning 7 Academy Awards. I mean, it's a big deal film in a lot of ways. The fact that a hack like Charlie Coffey gets to reference it in his little teleplay is fine. It's fine. But Rusty has his monologue. He's going to cut off her arm.
Mm-hmm.
Sam shows
up. And this
up.
Is this thing, it's like, in this little fight scene here that we do, Rusty is a dark human being. Like, first he attacks Sam with an axe.
Yeah.
Then a pipe, you know, that is what it is. Tries to sand his face off.
Yeah.
And in all this, like, he has thrown some, I don't know if it's rocks or nuts, we're talking about
the I think they're, like, big industrial-sized nuts or whatever.
And you were talking about, off mic, how awkward it looks. Like, you don't exactly see what happens to Machiko. I think it was just very awkwardly shot. You know, they're probably shooting in a hurry and just had to...
Because you have to ask, like, does she get hit by it, by the metal thing he's throwing through the window, or is it the glass that cuts her? Or is
I assume that he had thrown it well enough that it got through the windshield.
Because he's a pitcher, right?
That it got through the windshield and the actual whatever he threw actually got her and actually got her in the head.
Right.
But also in the real quick shot that we get, we get the shot that sometimes happens. It happened in The Incredible Hulk, to reference last week's episode, is in the pilot of the episode of The Incredible Hulk, like, the Hulk shatters a windshield, and it shatters like regular glass, just like the windshield in this scene.
Right.
It shatters like regular glass instead of the spider web that...
Yeah. Although, you know, I do wonder, and I honestly don't know, I wonder if...
In the 1950s?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been safety glass, because I don't think safety glass came along until a little bit later.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Interesting.
I'm not going to do that research.
Yeah. But anyway, so they have a fight. Sam ends up knocking Rusty out. I should mention also horrible people in this episode. Naomi disappears from this episode entirely.
We don't see her again.
At the end of the picnic.
And we never see what happens to Rusty. We don't know if he's in jail. We don't know if he's, you know...
I mean, you assume Rusty's going to go to jail. Hopefully. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I
don't know.
Maybe not. In a small town, maybe he just learned his lesson.
But Al is yelling at Sam, you know, Machiko's dying. You know, and so he takes her to the hospital. They're all waiting outside trying to figure out what's going on. Sam comes out and is like, you know, I think she's going to make it. I think she's going to be okay. And then Lenore has...
Well, this gets set up because Henry says, we've been praying for her, and Sam takes the opportunity to turn Lenore and says,
Have you? Yeah, and she's like, I'm a good Christian woman, and Sam's trying to get her to go in there to be there for Machiko to give her some support, and she won't do it. And then she has the moment that I'm sure is supposed to make us as the viewers break down and be like, oh, Lenore, I get your pain, and I know where you're coming from. And all I could think is she's talking about her daughter who committed suicide. I don't care. Not that I don't care about her daughter who committed suicide. I care very deeply for her because I imagine she didn't have it easy. I don't care about Lenore.
You know, that's the thing. Just thinking about it right now. I only care about Lenore in this scene because of Martha Kent. And other things that I have seen that actor in.
Well, Kay Callan.
Kay Callan, I feel for, but they have given Lenore no reason to be sympathetic. Or they've made her not sympathetic at all.
When I was 21 years old, I was working with a guy who lives in Chicago now, still one of my best friends. He was a groomsman in the wedding. He's directed me before. He's written stuff for me before. We've palled around and acted together, et cetera, et cetera. And he told me when I was 21, he's a few years older than I am, and he was going to school as a playwright. And he said, I was working on a show that was not very good, and I was trying to figure out what I could do to make it better. And he looks at me and he says, Sam, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. And I'm sorry, Kay Callan, but if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. And I just don't care. I just don't care. I think it's just so poorly written.
It is a very soap opera moment. like down to how they have her like go up,
turn her back to the window, with the storm coming
down,
and
she's looking at a thing, and that's not necessarily Charlie Coffey's fault. That would be
Gilbert Shelton.
Gilbert Shelton.
But he handled Disco Inferno with such aplomb.
Yes,
I have to believe.
Yes. So, but anyway, so her reason is that she was never able to do all of these things for Eileen. She was right. not able to be for her at the end. And I'm sure
when I went into her room, she was already gone. And as I told her all these things, she never heard them.
And I'm sure she was not mother of the year leading up to the events that caused Eileen to drive off a bridge. And of course,
no, because as Naomi tells us, no one was there for her except for Naomi. And if Naomi's your only friend, like, holy shit.
Yes. And of course they had to just nail it over your head, and they had to make it the same hospital room.
Right. Yeah. The same room. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, so in that, Eileen says, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I can't.
She leaves. And then Henry, as if we need explanation, says that she's not angry at Machiko. She's angry because she couldn't do anything to stop Eileen's death.
Yeah.
Thanks for putting a bow on it, Hank.
Hey.
And then days later, Machiko is fully recovered, and she and Sam are going to
She at least covered up, like we talked about off mic. Like, she has bangs, so she whatever. Yeah, like Sam.
I was actually just reading that from the wiki. That's what the wiki says.
Later, yeah. So... Yeah, and so Sam has a little bump on his head. There is, to bring it around to a more positive thing about this episode, there is a moment in this scene where, one, Sam is worried about...
It's my favorite scene of the whole episode.
Yeah, what happens if he gets married? Like, will he be married in the eyes of God? And again, Sam, stop being so damn... literal.
But it does lead to one of my favorite moments.
Yes.
Because Al then says... Go ahead.
No, go ahead, say it, yeah.
Because Al is basically like, you know, oh God, you weren't nervous the last time.
Or when Sam says, I'm sweating.
Yeah.
And Al says, yeah, you didn't sweat the first time.
And Sam's like, I'm married? And Al's like, no, of course not. And then there's this look on Al's face.
Yes.
And you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I went back and I watched that moment like three times because he has like... three distinct looks on his face in that moment, and the last one, yes.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like,
There's this look like, that was close. I shouldn't have.
Well, and it starts to reinforce what we were talking about with Disco Inferno, that somewhere, whether it was Belisario, Pratt, or the writers in general, whatever the case may have been, somebody had, I truly do believe that somebody had at least a thumbnail sketch of Sam's background and Sam's story, and Sam's like, how did we get here, you know, and where are we going to go? And I'm not talking about some grand arc like Babylon 5 or the X-Files or whatever, but there was enough to say, hey, every once in a while we could do something like this, or we can add this in, or this is who Sam is, this is where he came from, you know, that Bible, that series Bible, if you will, existed, and it had enough information that, yeah, that they're giving us something that you never... Again, if that episode aired for the first time in 2017, there would be a million message boards out there talking about Al's expression on his face, but because it aired in 1989, it was probably just largely forgotten and missed. But now that we're watching it here almost 30 years later, it's like, oh shit, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah.
So...
I mean, that's the thing to go back. I think we're talking about this last episode, like... Quantum Leap wasn't a show like The X-Files or like even Twin Peaks, which ran at a similar time, that didn't necessarily have the mythology attached to it. I think it could have, if Donald Belisario had trusted viewers more.
Sure.
They could have.
Yeah. Well, there are, and as we, you know, again, as we go through the series, I think we'll certainly be able to identify certain moments like this in certain episodes, like Disco Inferno, for instance, or Star-Crossed, or, you know, whatnot, that feel kind of like, you know, not to belabor a point or a phrase, an arc episode, you know, that feel important to the overall mythology of the series. They exist, without a doubt. And this is, we get these 10 seconds in an otherwise shitstorm of an episode that make you kind of go, huh? And I'm exaggerating, but it's not a terrible episode. It's just, it's sometimes the worst thing isn't to watch something that's absolute crap and you know it's crap. Mm-hmm. It's to watch something that you can identify what's wrong and what could make it better if they yeah. just changed a couple of things. Mm-hmm. That's even harder to do than to watch something that's just shit.
Yeah. And speaking of change.
Yes.
So where the episode ends is Machiko
has come down the aisle.
Has come down the aisle. Does Henry walk her down the aisle? She walked down herself. I can't remember.
I don't remember either, honestly.
I mean, it would have been awkward for the father of the groom.
Right.
To
walk her down the aisle.
To do it, but absent any other family member.
Right.
And now, I think she just walked her. She just walked herself down the aisle. But anyway, so she gets up to the aisle and she's like, I wish your mom would have been here. And Sam said, I wish so too. Maybe she'll come around. So on and so forth. Because it kind of, Sam leaping kind of hinges on
Lenore accepting
Lenore coming yeah. around. And so the back door of the sanctuary opens. And
Lenore's bathed in light like a creature descending from heaven in her kimono that Machiko gave her. She walks in looking all, what's the word I'm looking for? Apologetic, if you will, remorseful. There's a word that exists that I'm not thinking of that I would love to be able to use right now, but it's not going to come out. And anyway, she gives her little bow to Machiko, showing her respect for her. Machiko reciprocates. Sam smiles, and thank God he's out.
Leaves. And to hang it on the character and not the writer, how narcissistic do you have to be to show up in the middle of the ceremony and make it about you?
Yeah, yeah. No, she certainly does that.
I mean, I get it. It's an hour of television, especially in this time frame. There's not a lot of room to be subtle with the storytelling.
Sure, but one of the things Jessica and I were even talking about last night, because we watched the episode last night, one of the things that we were talking about is that if we had gotten any sort of sympathetic moments before,
leading up, yeah,
before her, you know, divulging her guilt over Eileen in the hospital, before her, you know, grandstanding at the wedding, had we gotten anything before that, it would have been so much more acceptable, so much easier to feel emotionally involved. But because she's just played as a horrible human being from the get-go, like, even when she's with Naomi, she's kind of, you know, being cold and just, mm-hmm. You know, treating Naomi like she's the town whore and, you know, and stupid to boot because she brought the wrong flowers and, like, mm-hmm. all this sort of stuff. And it's like, have we just gotten a sense of someone who genuinely missed, you know, her son and was grieving over the loss of her daughter? Had we gotten a sense enough of that? Had it not been kept as this big mystery for so damn long for no good reason? Maybe I would have been able to buy her monologue at the hospital. Maybe I wouldn't feel like you're feeling where she walks in and it's just sort of like, you couldn't have done that before. You could clearly, you were there when Machiko entered, because you're entering right after she is. Like, you couldn't have stopped her outside the church and been, you know, and given her the bow there, mm-hmm. and then entered in before Machiko, taking your seat down next to your husband, and then let the bride have her moment. I'm with you on this.
Mm-hmm.
And don't give me any arguments about dramatic tension or anything like that. Like, come on. Could have easily been done another way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to like this episode. I know it doesn't sound like it, is, but like, I really
I don't hate the episode. Like, going into rewatching this, because I don't think I've actually rewatched this episode in quite a while, it's like, I just had a memory. It's like, it's an okay episode. I'm not crazy about it.
Yeah. My memories were definitely fonder of it than my reaction to this.
And then, yes, and then we got into it. So anyway, so we get to the leap out, and this is what we talked about earlier, how with both the DVDs and the Blu-rays, they just do a straight dump of however it originally aired.
Yeah, which is
and
awesome.
So we leap into an episode we've already seen, The Color of Truth.
He's Jesse Tyler.
Sam leaping into Jesse Tyler. I have a feeling, just a guess, because I haven't rewatched a lot of these episodes on Blu-ray yet, I have a feeling he's going to end up as Jesse Tyler a lot throughout the second season. Because I feel like, because Color of Truth was like their keynote episode from the first season. Critically acclaimed.
Absolutely.
Had a big hand in it getting renewed for a second season. So I have a feeling during the second season, they re-aired that episode whenever they had a break from a new episode.
Yeah.
Fairly often. So it'll be interesting to see how many more times we end up in the color of truth.
You know, and not only obviously did we, but it was indeed actually repeated the next week.
That's what I mean.
Like, yeah. In the initial airing, which is interesting to think.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting to think how many times they re-edited the leap out of repeat episodes airing like this, you know, into the next episode.
Mm-hmm. But I find it interesting that, like, for reruns and for syndication, like, how often they went in and, like, just, like, re-edited an episode.
Yeah.
And now that I think about it, it's like, oh, that's actually putting a lot of work in that they didn't have to do.
Well, maybe it was, and I don't know, but maybe because the effect was something that was kind of dialed in a way. Like, once they got to season two, they could just go leap out, blue screen, bam, new one in.
Could very easily.
It was probably fairly easy to get into. I mean, it was still work, clearly, but...
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I will say, when the DVDs were initially released, and I realized that they did not fix it, like, they just, like, dumped, you know, they just put it on the DVDs, whatever, it did bug me, because I was nerdy enough, when I was a kid, when they started rerunning the series on the USA Network, and I realized that they were going to be showing the series in order.
Yeah.
I watched it the first time, and then I think the second time they started rerunning the series, I got the idea that I wanted to edit it in such a way, like just in recording it off TV, so that every cassette tape that I recorded on was actually one long episode.
So in other words, the leap out went into the leap in at the beginning of the next episode.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I did it so much, like the beginning of every cassette had the actual Saga Sale.
And had
the actual opening credits.
Yeah.
But then after that, it was always edited in such a way so that it just leaped into the next episode. No Saga Cell, no opening credits.
You did
just
some
episode
work.
Proper. I did that by myself initially because when they started rerunning the episode at that time, my school district was on strike.
Oh.
And was actually on strike for almost 2 months.
Wow.
So I did it myself during that time, because at that time USA was rerunning Quantum Leap in the mornings.
Yep, I
remember
that.
Like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So I did it myself, and then when school started back up, I got my mom to do it.
Okay.
For me. She would actually sit and do that stupid editing, and she would actually sit and watch the episode and...
Oh
and,
my God.
And edit out the commercials.
Oh.
And to go on a bit of a tangent to tell a story about my mom who passed away in 2008.
Okay.
I guess this would have been about a year or a few months before she passed away. I didn't have cable. Comedy Central did a roast of William Shatner that I really wanted to see. Two episodes in a row, we talk about the Comedy Central
roast.
Right,
Comedy Central
roast. But I really wanted to see it, but I didn't have cable, but my mom did.
Okay.
So I asked my mom to just record that for me, and then I would get the tape from her whenever the next time I visited, because I live in Chicago and she lived in Southern Illinois. And so the next time I came down, I asked her if she recorded that for me, and she hands me the video cassette. And she was like, I just want you to know that the things that these people said were some of the most vile, disgusting things I've ever heard in my life. And I said, I didn't expect you to watch it. Do you actually watch it? And she said, well, I had to edit the commercials out for you.
Oh my gosh. Dennis, the story you just told was more emotional than anything that happened in 47 minutes of the Americanization of Bitoco.
Well, there you go.
Oh, wow. That is very funny because, my mom encouraged my love of Quantum Leap, and I can remember USA did this thing at one time. And this happened, like USA would do this at other shows as well, but they did this thing where they would air an episode in the mornings and then they would air an episode at night, and it was in order so that if you missed one of the nighttime episodes, you missed it. Like, it wouldn't come back around until they started again. But it was just so weird of them to do. And then there was, and then they did it, and they changed it so that they aired two episodes at night, and it was always late at night. I think it was, like, at 11 and 12 or something like that. So you were watching Quantum Leap until 1 o'clock in the morning or something, which I did in high school because I didn't care, and I, you know, I'd sleep for 6 hours and get up and go to school. But anyway, yeah, because... remembering taping episodes in particular and having those old cassette tapes around, and then Sci-Fi Network would air the show, but Sci-Fi Network would air it in weird ways too, where it wasn't always in order, and sometimes they'd do marathons where they would air episodes, but it would just be like a best of marathon, and then sometimes they would do it where they would have two different orders running. So in other words, like, the morning episodes would be in season one and the evening episodes would be in season three, and it was very strange. And Sci-Fi did that with other shows as well. I think TNT even did that with Babylon 5 for a while, where TNT was airing, like, Babylon 5 in sequence, like, 5 days a week, but then there was a new episode once a week, so you could, like, technically be watching it 6 days a week, but you'd be getting episodes from season one, and then here's one from season five. And TV syndication, it's so different now.
I know.
With streaming, you just go and you watch anything you want, whenever you want, however many episodes you want, you know?
You know, it's interesting to maybe wrap up, put a button on it, is I've heard many times over that the magic number for syndication for U.S. TV shows is 100 episodes.
Yeah. Yep.
If you make it to 100 episodes, like, that's kind of like the benchmark you want to make, because then you can run in syndication forever.
Yeah.
Quantum Leap was 97 episodes.
Yeah.
So it always makes me wonder, like, if it just made it three more episodes, how much more would we be seeing Quantum Leap in reruns now?
Yeah.
Because you don't... Ion, I think that may be the name of the channel.
Yeah,
I think there's only one smaller channel that really reruns the show right now. Like, with streaming, you know, who cares? You can find it.
Right, or just buy the Blu-rays.
Or just buy the Blu-rays, yeah. You can do that,
except
too.
Mill Creek, if you're listening, put some fucking extras on it next time.
They had extras.
I'm surly today. I'm sorry, guys.
No, that's all good. speaking of... also new episodes, I just remembered, after I leave here today, I have a massage because I'm a massage therapist. And then I got to rush home because it's the new episode of Outlander tonight. By the way, to give a shout out to some friends of mine, if you are a fan of Outlander, there's a great Outlander podcast out there called the Podlander Drunk Cast, because they drink as they recap all of the episodes. They are also based out of Chicago, and you should definitely go check them out.
Yeah.
That was just an unplanned plug.
I think as far as Machiko goes, didn't love it. It's fine. Whatever. It's not gonna make my top 10 list for season 2.
Absolutely. But next week we will be covering What Price Gloria.
Right, which is interesting to talk about because that's not the leap out that we get, but the next episode on the docket is indeed What Price Gloria.
I am looking forward to that one.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I have not seen it in a while. I've not watched it recently.
Yeah.
So
same here. So yeah.
It'll be cool to watch it again. That's been one of the fun parts about doing the podcast in general, other than sitting here with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for joining us at Project Quantum Leap. We're going to leap out of here. Take care of yourselves in the meantime. Give us a call. No, don't call us.
Don't call
us. Facebook us, tweet us, Instagram us.
Fate's Wide Wheel. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed what you've heard or have any questions or comments, don't be shy. Reach out to us online at www.quantumleappod.com or Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at Fate's Wide Wheel. And remember to hit the subscribe button and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you may be listening. Until next time.
Time. I want to stay.
I want to go. You see my face, but it's not mine. If you can't see, you'll never know. How can I?